Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
It's Tuesday, the 15th of October. I'm Jules Breach. He's Andy Brassel, and this is Jules and Andy on Football Ramble Daily.
It's a comfortable win for England, but the 6-0 scoreline isn't what anybody will remember tonight in Sofia 4. More racist abuse of England players, the adherence of UEFA protocol, the game at least did get to the end, but UEFA have to have a long, hard look at exactly what has happened tonight.
Coming up, we'll discuss England's win in Bulgaria and the repercussions of that match as well. England beating Bulgaria by 6-0 in the Euro 2020 qualifiers. But there are certain things bigger than football. And the more important story on the night, Andy, England's stand against racism. And it felt like last night it was the first big real step in the fight against racial chanting at football matches. There was this protocol that we heard was going to be put in place, and we saw the actions of that. There was steps one and two. And this is the closest that we've come to seeing a match being abandoned due to racial chanting in the stands by fans. Do you think that the right thing happened on the night.
And a match of this profile as well. I think you have to say that because, unfortunately, it's not the first instance, even in this Euro 2020 qualifying campaign, of this sort of stuff being meted out to England's black players, as happened in Montenegro. But it's difficult because I can understand it's not happening quickly enough for some people, and I can totally understand that. But on the other hand, I do feel that the protocol was stuck to by and large, and I think that's very important. It felt like England pointed out what happened, and the officials reacted. Of course, you had a quite large group of Bulgarian fans being removed from the stadium before halftime. But it is tricky because, you know, people have such different reactions to it. I mean, we've been lucky. We've had a lot of correspondence this evening, and thank you for all your tweets. For example, we've got a couple here talking about the three-point protocol, as you were talking about, Jules. This is from Simon. Do you think the three-point protocol to tackle racism is working in this match? Should the England team have walked off by now and not wait for the third occasion racist chanting occurs? And Jacko writes, what should the correct procedure for racist abuse be? Three strikes is ridiculous in my opinion. One and done. England should have walked off. If England were to walk off, you know, we already see Raheem Sterling as a leader and someone who's bigger than football. It shouldn't be down to him to do it. It should be the white players who are leading that. It should be a decision of Kane and Southgate to do that if they were going to do that. And that was something I think Ian Wright pointed out. And Ian Wright was absolutely terrific on ITV tonight, by the way. You know, you could feel how passionately he felt it, but it was really well argued and clearly argued as well. I think the three-point protocol is, I can understand why people find it lenient, but I do think dialogue is important, because I don't think it's about communicating with those 50-odd people who are being chucked out of the ground at half time. I mean, they need to be removed. That what they believe and how they behave is unacceptable. But what I think is important in terms of communication, and I understand at times like this, especially with such an emotive subject, that the natural reaction is to say, let's just cut Bulgaria out of the competition. Let's just get rid of them. But for me, the communication is about the other people in the stadium and the next generation, and showing younger people who might be watching them that this is not acceptable and why it's not acceptable. That's really, really important, rather than just basing it on dealing with a group of people who are just completely, you know, beyond help, really.
Yeah, the behaviour from the section of Bulgarian fans that you're talking about was actually really upsetting to see and to watch. Mm. It was disgusting. It was horrible behaviour. And the protocol, in this sense, that the two steps that we did see in place worked, in the sense that those fans were removed.
Yep.
What was interesting is that in the second half, there was continuous racial chanting, and we could hear monkey chants when we were watching the highlights after the game as well, particularly when Raheem Sterling was on the ball, and nothing was done. And the third point of the protocol wasn't put in place. Now, my guess, and we don't know this for certain, but my guess is that Raheem Sterling didn't hear it the third time, because otherwise I'm almost certain that he would have gone over and said something. Why wouldn't he? The players all got together. As you say, it wasn't just the black players that were going over to Gareth Southgate and having a word. It was the whole team together, all went over in the first half, and they all had their say and decided collectively as a team that this was something they needed to stand together and have a say on. So,
and that's massively important.
It's hugely important. And in the second half, my only guess is that perhaps Raheem Sterling didn't hear those chants, because you know, I didn't hear it at the time the match was on. We only saw it when we were watching the highlights after the game, when ITV flagged it up. So that's my guess on why the match wasn't eventually abandoned, despite the fact that the racial chanting did continue into the second half.
How much do you think England's feelings should play into this and the feelings of Raheem Sterling and Tyrone Mings, the players directly affected, should play into it? Because, you know, we heard Greg Clark speaking afterwards, and I know what he had to say split opinion, and Ian Wright, for example, was pretty disappointed with it. But like, when the England team has made a collective decision at halftime, we want to carry on, we want to finish the job. I mean, it's a difficult decision, isn't it? And it's difficult for me to sit here and say what they should do. It's not for me to sit here and say what they should do. But how much does it play into it if Raheem Sterling and Tyrone Mings, for example, say, you know what, whatever happens from now on, let's just get out there, finish the job, win 6-0 and go home?
Well, I think that is down to the players, isn't it? And I think that even if there was one player who said, I disagree with that, I actually feel quite strongly about walking off the pitch if this happens again, I think as a team, they would have all stuck together and done it. So I do think that if a player felt very strongly one way or another, they would stick together. And it was clear that they decided to come out as a team second half and finish the game off. As I said, I do think if they heard the racial chanting continue in the second half, they would have walked off and this would have got to the final stage of the protocol and the match would have been abandoned. But I'm just reading Raheem Sterling's tweet now that he tweeted after the match. He said, I feel sorry for Bulgaria to be represented by such idiots in their stadium. But anyway, 6-0, we go back to our home. At least we did our job. Safe travel to our fans. You guys did well tonight. So he's pointing out that, you know, it is a small section of the Bulgarian fans because there was a large number of them that were still there and probably represented their country in the correct way. And we saw the Bulgarian captain at halftime going over to the home fans and pleading with them to stop this behaviour. And if there was anyone around them, to tell them to stop it, because I'm imagining that Popov probably thought, if this continues, we could be expelled completely from the tournament.
Yeah, that's right. Because of course they've got a good chance of getting into they're likely to get into the playoffs. So that would be a massive deal to them. I just wonder how people think this should be dealt with. We've got another piece of correspondence here from Gabriel. Thanks, Gabriel. It says, should UEFA consider banning Bulgaria from competing for a while? How many times can you have your fans chant racist things and only receive fairly mild punishments, which clearly don't affect on them? I think harsher punishment is required to make an example out of them. I think it is natural to want punishment and strict punishment at this time. But I think you've got to think about how do you actually go about changing things. And I don't know, does ostracizing an entire nation, does that really help? I mean, doesn't that just cut them off from the reasonable parts of football society? Doesn't that kind of allow extremism to grow off there in the corner on its own? That's what would concern me about that. I think UEFA's job as an organisation that's meant to be inclusive is surely to, you know, the thing is that the answers to this are not easy answers, are
they're
they?
Not, no.
There is stuff that takes time. Mm. And I understand people's desire for swift action and retribution in a way, but that's not going to fix things.
No, I don't think it will either. I agree with you. This is something that's going to take a lot of time. And I think one of the important things that we saw in the match is that we've not seen this before. We've not seen Protocol 1, Protocol 2, where the match was stopped for a certain period of time while they were discussing what their next move was going to be. We've not seen that happen in a match of this magnitude, in a qualifier for a major tournament. And I believe that this is a first big step, because other fans of other nations and other teams will have watched that tonight. And this will be huge news all around the world, what happened in Bulgaria last night. And I think that other teams and other fans will see this and will say, well, we don't want this to happen to us. Surely this has to be a step in something changing. And that's why Ian Wright, prior to, you know, hearing Greg Clark's comments after the game, the FA chairman, why he was quite positive about what had happened on the pitch. He called it a fantastic moment. And I think that it's important that we remember how positive it was that those steps were taken. Because before this, all we'd seen was banners in stadiums. What's that going to do? That's not going to do anything.
Yeah, I don't think it is going to do anything. And I don't think fines are going to do anything.
And so playing games behind closed doors, that does nothing either. Those things aren't going to be enough. Whereas what we saw in this game was, it felt different. It felt like there was more to it, and it felt like we were actually getting somewhere. Because if that happens again and the racist chants continue, I guarantee you a game will be abandoned soon.
Yeah. 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 I think that's absolutely right. I guess the other side of it, though, saying that dialogue is important and changing attitudes is important and that takes time. I think we can't expect UEFA or football to cure all of society's ills. And this is societal, isn't it? It's not just
a
football problem. It just happens to be taking place in a football stadium. So I guess the bottom line is, what is the most safe, reasonable, I don't know if comfortable is the right word, because, you know, we like atmosphere at a stadium. But what is the optimum conditions for black players and players of colour to just do their jobs without being hassled? I mean, that is all football can really affect. So that's the other side of it, isn't it?
It's just really unfair that these men are going to work. This is their workplace. The football pitch is their workplace, and they are turning up to work and being racially abused publicly. So something has to be done, and now is the time. We've done enough of waiting around to see what other steps can be done. We're now seeing something that tonight, actually, it worked, essentially, because we heard from Tyrone Mings after the match. He said that in the second half, he felt that it had improved. The atmosphere had improved, and he wasn't hearing the chants anymore. So if this is working, then it has to be put in place again. And this has to be the procedure that we follow. And I'm sure that UEFA will have learnt from the match what they can do better next time, how they can improve that, and how they can maybe make this a quicker process, and all of the things that we want to see, and ultimately to stop racism in football.
But really, it's been the players who've been the leaders, hasn't it? I mean, ITV showed that thing a couple of times of Tyrone Mings drawing attention to it quite early on from to the assistant ref. And I think that's quite notable, isn't it? Because to have that environment and to have that confidence, I think, and that is like part of the environment around you, I think.
Particularly when you're on your debut.
When you're on your debut, when you're trying to concentrate on that, to turn around and bring it to the officials' attention, I think is really, really important. I mean, we've talked about Raheem Sterling and his leadership qualities. And players do have so much power in their word, so much more power than they ever did before. And of course, social media is a huge part of that. And Raheem Sterling, for example, who I would never say is the most effusive in interviews, he's able to get on the front foot and get his message across through his own channels. And I think, you know, that is something that puts pressure on the authorities to do something, is something that sets the agenda. And that is hugely important. And I think really that has been the main thing to make this night feel that is different.
And we have to remember as well the ages of these players we're talking about. These are young men, and they have such huge responsibility on their shoulders. Not only do they have the pressure of the job they're doing, they're in the spotlight, they have to perform, they want to qualify for this major tournament for their country. But not only that, but they have got a huge societal issue with millions of people watching over to see how they are going to handle this situation.
And they shouldn't have to.
They shouldn't have
to. They should just be able to get on with their job.
Exactly. But look at how they dealt with it. They had dealt with it with class. They dealt with it as a team. And I couldn't have been prouder watching the way that they all handled it. And Gareth Southgate as always, was just absolutely brilliant. He said post-match, we made two statements tonight, one on the pitch and one with the stand we made on racism.
Yeah, I think that's right. But it does make you think, doesn't it, the amount of pressure on those players who have to come out and, you know, are expected to be leaders in their early or mid-20s. I mean, Mario Balotelli's been through it all, and I know people have their issues about the way he conducts himself on the pitch. I mean, that's a completely different and, in this case, totally irrelevant aside to that. But, you know, I think it's something that's very rarely acknowledged about Balotelli, that as a black Italian, for the stuff he had to cope with from when he was a teenager, and, you know, he's just a normal Italian teenager. As one Italian journalist once said to me, all he wanted to do when he was at Inter was not go out clubbing. He wanted to, like, spend all his money on pizza, bad trainers, and computer games that he could play with his mates. And all of a sudden, he's expected to be a spokesman for a generation.
A leader.
That is just, it's unbearable pressure, really, isn't it? And it's something that, whatever you think about Balotelli and if he's maximised his talents or whatever, I think as someone who can speak out eloquently on these sort of issues, he's been absolutely fantastic, and that is rarely acknowledged.
It's such a difficult thing to do, and particularly, as you mentioned, Andy, and you can speak more about this than I can in terms of your European football knowledge, but in Italy, the racism out there, it's almost, it feels to me when I watch on as a fan, like it's acceptable in those stadiums because it's so apparent.
It's funny because I think it seemed as if they got to a point where they'd started to deal with it very well when they closed the San Siro after Khalidou Koulibaly got some racist abuse when Inter played Napoli last Christmas. And Ancelotti had talked about his willingness to walk off the pitch in the future. And I think to have a white coach of that profile come out and say that was very, very important. And the fact that the FIGC, the Italian FA, reacted in that way to close the San Siro, they know how important that is to Inter financially in terms of support. And of course, the San Siro is the most iconic stadium in Italian football. That seemed to be a real step forward. But since, there have been incidents surrounding the likes of Moise Kean, Blaise Matuidi, Romelu Lukaku this season, and they've not been dealt with at all. So what happened in Bulgaria last night is something that, as Ian Wright said, to go back to what he was saying, should be an epochal moment, but it's something that can't be allowed to drop. It can't just drift into the background. It's something that people have got to keep talking about. Mm. And in the coming days, weeks, months, until the next international break and beyond, if it's really to be a turning point and if it's really to make a difference.
It's really important that the discussion happens, and part of the reason why we're discussing it today. And I think that it needs to also filter down into domestic leagues as well, because we talk about this a lot when it comes to the international fixtures, Andy, but actually on a weekly basis, up and down the country in the domestic leagues, racism is there. It happens. And I wonder how much more will be done, say, in the Premier League and further down in the Football League as well, to combat this after seeing what happened in Bulgaria.
Well, that is something that, even if you have issue with some of the aspects of what Greg Clark was saying, something I did think he was very strong on is by not trying to duck English football's own issues. I think that's really, really important, because I think it can be easy at a moment like this, and understandable in many ways, to kind of take the moral high ground and go, isn't it terrible out here?
Isn't it terrible what Bulgaria are doing? But it's not just
exactly
the Bulgarian fans.
Exactly.
This isn't just Bulgarian fans are racist. That's not at all what's happened here. This is actually a much wider issue about football fans in general and how this needs to be stopped. Unfortunately, when you hear people saying things like, oh, what was their monkey chance? Can we be sure? Of course there was. Mm. There's no, just stop denying it. There's absolutely no need to deny what we have all witnessed, because it was clearly obvious that those were monkey chants. So anyone that sits there and says, oh, but were they monkey chants? Can you be certain? Of course you can be certain. That there's, I don't agree with anyone that says, oh, you can't be sure, because I think you can be. And I think that anyone that tries to deny that is just in denial themselves, because they don't want to face the issue, because it's not a nice thing to tackle. Of course it isn't.
No, it's not. But look, this is a start, and let's hope it's only the start and that things are going to improve from here. But the one thing of all the really interesting and thought-provoking things that Ian Wright did say tonight that will really stick with me is that he said that his generation was the era that turned the other cheek. Mm. And now that's not the case. We're in a generation that's going to take action, and let's hope that's the case.
Kane will be able to pick it up. He's beaten one, he's beaten another. Goalkeeper comes out and he has scored. Kane makes it six, and there's a look of relief on his face, a grin as he looks to the heavens. Finally, he's been able to take a chance tonight as it was rolled in for him, and he's drawn the goalkeeper and fired it past him into the bottom left-hand corner.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
There was actually the issue of a really good England performance as well in Bulgaria last night, and they came out with that 6-0 win. And a few of you have been in touch about that as well. Of course, you can always get in touch with us, Jules and Andy, at footballrambledaily.com, and at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel. Just going to read through a couple of your comments here. Christian Henage has written, who's been your favourite England player to watch across the last few internationals? That's an interesting one.
Good question.
And Just John, who I think is from your neck of the woods, is at Bright John.
Hey.
Very clever. I'm thinking that last Friday was a bad night at the office, and this is the England team we know and love. If Euros were to be held tomorrow, would we make it to the final?
It's funny, because after Friday night's game, I came into the match against Bulgaria not as confident as I was on Friday. Ooh. I'm not going to lie, because it was not a defensive masterclass on Friday at all, was it? But a lot more confident, a lot more assured. We've talked about everything that was happening in the stadium. For the players to still put on a performance like they did against Bulgaria was seriously impressive. Clinical finishing. We could have had more.
Yeah, although I didn't see why Harry Kane had to be left on for the entire game. Pochettino must have been absolutely doing his nut.
I was thinking that as well. But that man never wants to leave the pitch. He wants to play 90 minutes in every single game. He just wants to score goals.
He doesn't. And when you can... It sounds an exaggeration to say that he's cut from the same cloth as Leo Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. But in that sense, he is.
Oh, don't. Cristiano Ronaldo scored his 700th. goal last night. That man is a machine.
Well, look,
Harry Kane's not in the same league yet.
Harry Kane is on pens though, which I think is something you have to respect. Of course, Cristiano Ronaldo's 700th goal was a penalty.
Kane's on pens.
What I mean is that he's cut from the same cloth. I'm not even talking about talent. And you're right. You can't compare him to them yet, but. He's the same in the sense that he's relentless. He's almost obsessive in the way he goes about things. He's someone who improves a part of his game every single season. And that's what at least allows him to dream of being up in the same sort of area of those guys. And I don't know what other goal scorers really you can compare to those guys in a European context over the last couple of seasons, because he's been absolutely relentless. On no rest, and he's played through a load of injuries, really. So I guess maybe at this point, Pochettino knows, well, he's just going to do what he wants, isn't he? If he wants to stay on and score a meaningless goal at the end against Bulgaria, let's let him.
I don't think Maurizio Pochettino would have any choice in that matter, because I think Harry Kane, as long as he's fit, he will play and want to play every single minute out on the pitch, and he'll want to score a goal, set up a goal, be involved in the goals, do whatever it takes for the team. Obsessive is probably the best word you could have picked to describe it.
Yes.
I think that's spot on.
I want to bring you back to Kristen's question about who's been your favourite England player to watch over the last few internationals. Yeah, I mean, you can take away Friday night's game. You can just look at the Bulgaria game.
None of the above. it's such a tricky one, really, isn't it? I would say that Raheem Sterling just continues to impress me and amaze me on and off the pitch every single time he's in that England squad.
Yes.
He's just an amazing young man. And especially when, and it sounds really weird to say it because he scored 6 goals for Manchester City this season and he's up there as one of the leading goal scorers in the Premier League.
Yeah.
He hasn't actually been at his best for Man City. So to then come into the England team and you've then got to, you know, perform for your country, he's not been playing at his best yet. You see against Bulgaria that he's in amongst pretty much every single one of the 6 goals that were scored.
Yeah.
He's, for me, he has got to be my favourite England player right now.
Well, I think Henry Winter was saying in the Times yesterday before the game, really what England need to be doing is finding a system to maximise what Raheem Sterling's got. I think that's a very fair point. And if you look at that sort of way they played, I mean, Henry Winter was talking about the fact that Sevilla needs to be the template when England went and won there in the Benito Villamarín last year. And yeah, I don't think it's realistic to expect England to play like that every time. That was an amazing performance, particularly in the first half, to blow away Spain. But that idea of basing what they've got around their offensive attributes and especially the pace that they've got in the front half of the pitch around Kane, with Kane dropping to make the passes and playing in those guys, ideally it would always work like that. I think you need a plan B, because I think other countries have started to get wise to that to a certain degree. And they're going to find a way to cut off Kane and get centre-halves to follow him, I think.
And you see that happen at times, don't you?
Yeah.
You can see that certain teams have massively done their homework on England and Kane seems pretty abstract in matches.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing is, in the past, maybe even a season ago, defenders would have looked at Harry Kane and thought, well, if I get him outside the penalty box, I'm quids in. But that's not the case. Mm. You've got to go with him if you're a defender, because he can drop 40 yards from goal and make the passes. And when you have Sterling, Sancho, Rashford, players like that, even Mason Mount breaking from midfield if he starts to play more and more, that's an area in which he could excel. Like Harry Kane could almost become the team's primary creator. You know, we're always talking about this number 10, and maybe that facilitated the rather unsuccessful tactical switch in the Czech Republic, because they wanted to get Mason Mount in the spot and let him express himself, create a position for him which would be quite faithful to his club position, which really is all any international coach wants to do, isn't it? Place a player in the conditions in which they succeed for their club. So I respect them trying that out. I mean, presumably it would have been James Maddison in the spot had he been well enough. But on the other hand, I do think that the plan A with Harry Kane is such a seductive one when you look at the pace that England have.
What was your thoughts on Gareth Southgate? Because he made quite a few changes for the Bulgaria game. I wasn't expecting to see the Rashford-Sancho change. Did it surprise you? How do you think Rashford got on?
Okay, but I don't think he's in a terrific place at the moment, really. I think part of that is a collective expression of where Manchester United are. But he's not quite himself at the moment. I don't feel he's at his best either for club or country. I suspect from a Dortmund perspective, they'll be delighted to see Sancho not put on the rack for 180 minutes while he was away. Because even before the international break, he looked a little bit tired for the first time in a while. And you've got to bear in mind how young he is. I don't think him playing 90 minutes every single week is necessarily of benefit to anyone. So I think it's an expression, though, as well, that England have this depth. They're able to mix it up. If England have got concerns, it's not in the front half of the pitch.
No, it's defensively, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that the shape of the midfield is an issue. I think the defence is still an issue. And I know Luke was talking about the fullbacks on the ramble yesterday, and I think that's absolutely right. There are demonstrably two better fullbacks, or two more informed fullbacks that you can pick at the moment in Alexander-Arnold and Chilwell.
I actually thought that Trippier had a good game against Bulgaria, though.
Yeah,
I
he did.
He played really well, and
he globally has played pretty well for Atletico so far.
But I do think that Alexander-Arnold is the better right back.
You could actually make an argument that if he's not the best right back in Europe, he's really close.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. I think the discussion around him is interesting recently, because he's such a good, not just a good fullback, he's such a good footballer. I think people are starting to look at him like they looked at Gareth Bale when he played at left back for Spurs. Like, why are you hiding one of your best players back there? And I wonder how that discussion will progress, not just for Liverpool, but for England, especially when England need that little bit more creativity. I don't think it's off the table to see him being pushed a little bit further forward for England, especially in the next year or two.
And when you see his achievements at his age, it is actually extraordinary what Trent Alexander-Arnold has achieved. And I am amazed that he didn't play for England in these two games, despite the fact that, as I said, I thought Kieran Trippier had a really good game against Bulgaria. And the other fullback, I do think that Chilwell, for me, is the preferred left-back to Danny Rose.
Yeah.
Obviously, that was an enforced change because Danny Rose was suspended for Bulgaria. But for me, I would pick Chilwell over Danny Rose in that position. Would you?
Yes, I certainly would. I also think, you know, we talked about him right at the start in a different context. But it was a good night for Tyrone Mings. And that's not escaped the notice of our listeners. Jesse Smith here said Tyrone Mings didn't put a foot wrong. Obviously, he didn't have a lot of defending to do. I don't think he is, actually. No, I don't think he is even. Obviously, didn't have a lot of defending to do, but looked decent on the ball and a big physical presence. And then also we've got one here from Esquin92. What an excellent player. Absolute dream set of physical tools for a centre-back and fantastic on the ball. We tested more in his defensive technique, positioning, but what a promising start on the
pitch. Well, he was a lot better than Keane. He looked confident. We talked about him having to deal with the issues of racism during the match as well. The confidence he had to make a stand against that on his debut. He looked confident on the ball. He just had a really good match all round on his debut. And I think that is now his position for me. I can't see Keane coming back into that centre-back position.
So going back to the original question at the start of the section, final next year, what do you reckon?
I'm always confident when it comes to England. So I'm going to say yes. Why not? Why can't we make the final?
Hopefully next week, Jules, we'll be talking a lot more about football and a lot less about the other stuff. But it's been fun as always. Thanks everyone for your tweets and your correspondence. We couldn't do it without you. It's been absolutely invaluable. Like I said, if you want to tweet us at Jules Breach, at Andy Brassel, you can email us at julesandandy@footballrambledaily.com. Unless you're selling products, we don't want to buy any products.
We get quite a lot of those emails. We don't want those anymore. Make sure you send in anything that you want us to mention on the show, and we'll see you again next week. Have a good one.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
And on my way around a duck.
So if you fancy a sit down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.